Before Reverend Taylor gives her sermon, I just wanted to announce the change in the program. Obviously, this was not expected, but I certainly applaud Beth Hilliard and Linda Mattern for their amazing music this morning. Last minute.
I'd like to echo that. I have really enjoyed the music very much this morning, so thank you to all of our singers and musicians. I'm delighted to be here this morning with you all. I have been curious to worship with you all at some point, and so now here I am. So I'm delighted to be here with you today. Our text for this morning comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, verses 24 through 30, and then 36 through 43. In this text, Jesus is telling a parable. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field, but while everyone was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" And he answered, "An enemy has done this." The slaves said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he replied, "No, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" And then Jesus left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples approached him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." And Jesus answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so will it be at the end of time. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen." This is the word of God. Thanks be to God. Well, each spring, my husband David and I have high hopes for our garden. We think about those juicy red tomatoes and those green beans and those bright zinnias, and we get all excited. But most years, we don't get around to planting our garden until maybe late May. And then by late June, we have grown a wonderful harvest of weeds. It's really quite embarrassing because if we push the weeds aside, we might find a tomato or two. To look at our garden, you would think that we had read Jesus' parable as an instruction manual on how to grow a good crop of weeds. As pitiful a gardener as I am, even I know that this parable sounds backwards. Let the weeds grow side by side with the wheat? It doesn't make sense. The weeds are going to get out of hand and choke the life out of the good plants. It's interesting to me that Jesus chooses weeds as an image for sin and evil. It's really a brilliant analogy. Think about it. Weeds are persistent. They're always springing up in new places. Weeds are hardy. They don't take any cultivation. They thrive with no attention at all. Just as you get one area cleared of the weeds, more weeds pop up somewhere else. Just as we do not want to have weeds in our gardens, and yet they inevitably are there, so sin and evil are inevitably part of life on this earth. And weeds can be deceptive. Some weeds are really pretty. Children learning to be garden helpers are easily confused. Which green thing is a good plant and which one is a weed? It can be easy to pull up the good plant while leaving that pretty weed to grow, fooled by its colorful blossom. Just like weeds, sin can be deceptive, putting on an attractive face just to fool us. In this parable, we find ourselves identifying with the servants who are eager to get rid of all those weeds and tidy things up and root out evil. We want orderliness. We want purity. It seems obvious to us that surely Jesus would oppose evil in every form and exhort us to root it out at each new sighting and quickly before it gets out of hand. Yet this is not what Jesus says. This parable serves as a warning that in our efforts to do something good, like root out evil, we may be inadvertently doing something that is not good. Throughout history, we see lots of examples of this. People who may have started out with very good intentions to address something that wasn't right ended up perpetrating an evil instead. Of course, the classic example is the Crusades in the Middle Ages, when Christians killed tens of thousands of people just because they weren't Christian and wouldn't convert. They were absolutely convinced that God wanted them to do this. And of course, we think that is just crazy. God didn't want them to do that. And yet that's what they did. In more recent history, even right here in South Carolina, lynch mobs hanged black men who had done nothing worse than look a white woman in the eye. The evil these lynch mobs perpetrated was a million times worse than the fabricated wrong that they were addressing. It was inexcusable. And even more recently, people who identify themselves as pro-life have ended up killing doctors, which doesn't fit with being pro-life. So you kill a person to say that killing is wrong? That doesn't make sense. Or we think about the man who stormed the pizza parlor 18 months ago, eager to rescue all the victims of a child sex trafficking ring. He created chaos when he entered shooting bullets that could have killed someone. But there was no sex trafficking ring there. It really was just a pizza parlor. It can be easy to lose perspective and to get so focused on the evil we're trying to root out that we don't realize when we become the ones perpetrating evil. This parable warns us that as obvious as it may seem to us what is good and what is evil, life may be far more ambiguous than we're comfortable with. And this parable also tells us that God alone will make the final determination. Yet even as this parable is a warning, it's also a promise. Even though it looks to the servants, that the farmer waits too long to deal with the weeds. The farmer does indeed deal with the weeds and harvest a good, pure crop of wheat. This parable is a promise that in the end, God will triumph over those forces of sin and evil that seem so insidious and strong to us. As we look around our world, it's easy to see weeds everywhere. Weeds of abuse, violence, greed, corruption, human trafficking, oppression, abuse of power. We even see lots of weeds in the capital C church. Manipulations, financial misconduct, sexual misconduct, distorted theology that plays on fears and condones oppression and racial injustice. The biblical scholar Tom Long writes that as eager as we may be to root out all those weeds, this parable, quote, frees us from having to play God and set things right all by ourselves, end quote. He goes on to write that, quote, in the parable, the farmer is patient. The farmer's patience allows the church to be patient and confident and not to launch any fearful or destructive inquisitions, ripping itself apart out of a puritanical zeal to punish wrongdoers, end quote. Yes, of course, we can put structures into place to bring a measured, calm accountability for misbehavior, not focused on punishment, but focused on healing and restoration and redemption. But we need to beware any emotional crusade that whips up passions and distorts the gospel of love into a weapon of judgment and condemnation and violence. The good news of this parable is that God's ultimate victory over sin and evil is not dependent on our actions, and that the persistence of the weeds is not the final word. In this parable, we tend to identify with the servants who want to pull up all those weeds. But there is another place we can find ourselves in this text. In the wheat field. Each one of us is like that wheat field. Each one of us is a mixture of good wheat and weeds. Each one of us has good qualities and destructive behaviors. Now, some of us are better than others at hiding our shortcomings, but every one of us has that shadow side, those parts of ourselves that we don't like and that we'd rather not admit or face. One minute we might be living out of our best selves, but the next minute we're not. We speak hurtful words. We judge others. We withhold forgiveness. We overlook the suffering of our neighbor. As we recognize ourselves as this field that is full of both weeds and wheat, we can find great hope in this parable that God will, in the end, separate out the good from the bad and cleanse us and purify us. One of my favorite things each December is listening to Handel's Messiah. All the lyrics of those songs are straight from the Bible. And one of the songs has words from the prophet Isaiah. God is like a refiner's fire. A refiner's fire is used to purify gold. It's a fire that burns away the waste, all the dirt and debris, what they call the dross, in order to clean the gold and make it pure. And so I wonder, what if these fires that Jesus mentions in this parable are not primarily fires of condemnation or eternal damnation, but instead are fires primarily of purification? What if the purpose of these fires is to burn away all the bad parts so that the good parts shine brightly? I'd like to close with a modern-day parable written by Barbara Brown Taylor, a nationally known preacher and writer. She writes this. Hear another parable of the wheat and the weeds. One afternoon in the middle of the growing season, a bunch of farmhands decided to surprise their boss and weed his favorite wheat field. No sooner had they begun to work, however, than they began to argue. First about which of the wheat-looking things were weeds, and then about the rest of the weeds. Did the Queen Anne's lace really pose a threat to the wheat, or could it just stay for decoration? And the blackberries, they would be ripe in just a week or two, but they were, after all, a weed. Or were they? And the honeysuckle, it seemed a shame to pull up anything that smelled so sweet. About the time they got around to debating the purple asters, the boss showed up and ordered them out of his field. Dejected, they did as they were told. Back at the barn, he took their machetes away from them, poured them some lemonade, and made them sit down where they could watch the way the light moved across the field. At first, all they could see were the weeds, and what a messy field it was. What a discredit it was to them and to their profession. But as the summer wore on, they marveled at the profusion of growth. Tall wheat, surrounded by tall goldenrod, ragweed, and black-eyed Susans. The tares and the poison ivy flourished alongside the Cherokee roses and the milkweed, and it was a mess, but a glorious mess. And when it had all bloomed and ripened and gone to seed, the reapers came. Carefully, expertly, gently, the reapers gathered the wheat and made the rest into bricks for the oven where the bread was baked. And the fire that the weeds made was excellent. And the flour that the wheat made was excellent. And when the harvest was over, the owner called them all together, the farmhands, the reapers, and all the neighbors, and broke bread with them. Bread that was the final distillation of that whole messy, gorgeous, mixed-up field. And they all agreed that it was like no bread any of them had ever tasted before. And it was very, very good. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. Amen.